He's really, you know, gained in confidence and understanding what we're trying to do offensively. It's going to be fun to see how those guys continue to develop over the summer. And I think, our team will have confidence in those guys to come out there and lead our offense.
He absolutely can play the point. He was the beneficiary this year of being one of two primary ball handlers, along with Jarrett Bynum. If he hadn't gotten hurt, his assist numbers probably would have been better. But yeah, can certainly distribute the basketball, really good off the dribble, explosive to the basket.
Come on, everybody!
You're in the zone.
In the zone.
The Zone with Jason Anderson. Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville.
We should send Jason to negotiate with North Korea. We should send Jason to negotiate with Russia.
Want to be part of the show? Give us a call at 267-9680.
Now,
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Oh, child, I am so sorry. I am so sorry somebody's playing mean jokes on you.
Powered by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
All right, it's a Friday edition of The Zone. It's ESPN 680, 105.7. Jason Anderson with you. We are hanging out, heading up until 6 o'clock. Beautiful outside. Absolutely gorgeous in Augusta. It's about to get a little rainy. You know what it's about to do? It's about to hit the weekend that they have been talking about that's going to be the rain and the thunderstorms. That's going to happen in the next couple of hours. So be prepared for that and be prepared for whatever your weekend of watching golf might be, that there might be delays and there might be suspensions. And who knows about Sunday, because it's supposed to thunderstorm all day there in Augusta. It might be a Monday finish with the Masters, but we'll see. We'll find out. We'll certainly continue watching and paying attention and covering it as well. In case you're wondering, Tiger Woods just birdied the fourth, putting him at 3 under. He had a 11-foot birdie putt that he squeaked by on the third, and then a par three in which he put it 5 feet from the cup on the tee and just knocked in the birdie putt about 2 minutes ago. So now he's sitting at -3. Francesco Molinari is playing phenomenal golf right now. He is 2 up on the field. He's sitting at -7, and I believe at 17 he's got a birdie putt from about 3 feet. So he may be looking to go 3 up on the field and a hole away from entering the clubhouse. So at -8. So he's been playing pretty well today. Jason Day -5. Ian Poulter -5, Phil Mickelson sitting at -5, halfway through the back nine, Brooks Koepka at -5. We've got John Rahm sitting at -4, who's, you know, people think has a decent chance of winning this week. And you've got so many major winners in their career that are sitting right at, near, or in second place on the leaderboard. So it could be shaping up to be a fantastic weekend if the weather gods will cooperate. We shall see. We'll have it for you all weekend long. You know that. It is all brought to you by Baptist Sports Medicine, Wooded View Golf Course, and Kentucky Farm Bureau tomorrow and Sunday starting at 2 o'clock. Dustin Johnson, by the way, just rolled in a birdie putt on the 15th. He is now -6 in sole possession of second place, one off Molinari. So there is a lot of red going up today throughout the day at the Masters. So maybe the rain earlier today softened the greens a little bit, so people are starting to post some numbers. So we will keep you up to date on all of that. Another Kentucky player making the decision. Well, I should say two. Another two Kentucky players making the decision. One, don't know. Two, we know for a fact. The one that you don't know, Tyler Hero announcing earlier today, what about 11 o'clock, 10:30 around there, that he will be going pro. He will be putting his name into the NBA draft. He will be using the new rules, having an advisor, an agent, whatever you want to call it, and testing the NBA draft waters to see what their response is going to be. And he leaves it incredibly vague on if he's a high pick, he will stay in the NBA draft. That is left up to discussion and debate and for whatever his view is on what high draft pick is. That's a relative term. If I was drafted a high, that might be, you know, drafted at all. It might be I was enjoying hanging out with some friends in our fraternity on a Friday night. That might be a high draft pick. I'm not sure.
The Shane Bohannon pick.
that as well could be the wherever he was drafted. He was taken second in the pickup game yesterday, so that was a high draft pick there as well. So Tyler Hero making his announcement there, and then earlier this afternoon, Emmanuel quickly saying he will return to Kentucky. So there is no testing the NBA waters. That's not a surprise. There is nothing crazy or groundbreaking on that. But you go through the days and you start to see more and more players solidify what at least is going to be over the next few months. So we know that Keldon Johnson and Tyler Hero are going to test the NBA waters. We know that Reed Travis and PJ Washington are gone. I think Hero and Keldon Johnson are gone as well. Emmanuel quickly announces he's coming back. Ashton Hagans announces he's coming back. The last part would be EJ Montgomery and Nick Richards on what their decision is going to be. If there's going to be a surprise with either or both of those, if there's going to be what is expected, and that is both of those guys would return. I would say throughout most of last offseason and the beginning part of this year, what was expected with Nick Richards was that this was his last year at Kentucky, regardless of whatever happened. Now is the time as to whether or not all of that talk was true or if it was just simply assumed or it was thought of at the time without thinking that regardless of result meant the season that he was going to have. It might have been, no, he's going to go pro regardless of result. And then you look up and you're like, well, the result ain't exactly what you were hoping. Yeah, maybe he returns. That's certainly a decision that could have an impact on Kentucky next year, because then you'd have a rim protector, whether he's used or not. You would have a rim protector on the team on the roster that's pretty good at blocking shots and is sitting there with, what, a 7'4", 7'5 wingspan. And E.J. Montgomery, a guy who offers some skill, the ability to knock down jump shots, offensive skill around the basket, also a rim protector. Those two guys would be crucial for Kentucky next year to go along with Quickly, Hagans, and Maxey, that are guys that are Maxey, a dynamic wing, and then you've got Quickly and Hagans that can handle the rock, Quickly that can shoot it, Hagans that will probably be your lead guard. So, though, also, Brad Calipari. I mean, he redshirted this year, so now he's available again. Might as well count him, put him in the fold. That's the latest in sort of news that came down today as it relates to Kentucky and Louisville in some of the news there. Scott Satterfield was on with Mark Ennis yesterday, and I definitely want to hear some clips from Scott Satterfield before the show is over, and probably here in the opening segment, just simply because some of the things he was talking about, and that is the quarterback for next year for Louisville. There are three guys on the roster. Is the quarterback actually on the roster? I think that is absolutely a question. I thought it was a really good question about Malik Cunningham as to whether or not he will be a quarterback. Let me just say this. If he will be a backup quarterback, if he's sitting there on the sideline and the starting quarterback is not Malik Cunningham and he's on the sideline, does it make sense for him to hold a clipboard? Scott Satterfield weighed in on that as well. And then there was another clip in there that I thought was interesting, and him talking about the transfers. 13 different players in the transfer portal since Scott Satterfield has taken over. Some of those things happened. Some of that is certainly to be expected. And we'll play a clip from there, and I'll compare it to what we heard from PJ Fleck when we were at the Final Four a week ago today, when we had the Minnesota head coach on, who took over Minnesota from Western Michigan and had a rough first year. And then his second year, they won, what, 4 out of 5? They went to a bowl game. They won at Wisconsin. They got their rivalry trophy back from Wisconsin. So a number of things that they felt went pretty well for Minnesota this year. And I talked to him about what Scott Satterfield is facing, what he's up against, and what that rebuilding process is going to be like for the new Louisville head coach. And he weighed in on a number of things with that. So I'm going to compare those two. UK spring football in action tonight. I mean, I just think there's a few things you watch tonight, right? I mean, Terry Wilson, you know, is the quarterback. A.J. Rose and Lynn Bowden offensively, probably the main, you know, view that you're going to be paying attention to. And then defensively, it's like, who the heck's in the secondary? I mean, Kentucky's replacing their entire secondary. Most everybody that was even a part of the rotation last year. So they're replacing all guys, essentially. Now, I don't know how much you're going to be able to glean from watching a spring football game, but those are the things that people are going to be watching. A.J. Rose filling in
for one, Benny Snell, and then Lynn Bowden, who is the receiver returning. I mean, after Lynn Bowden, the only guys on UK's roster that are returning totaled, I think, what, 21 or 22 receptions last year? Because you're losing a number of receivers, clearly tight end as well, and Richardson is transferring. So, Lynn Bowden, A.J. Rose, secondary for Kentucky. Landon Young is returning finally after sitting out all of last year at the left tackle. That's also something that maybe people will be watching, is just to see Landon Young back in a Kentucky uniform and on the field yet again. So that's coming up tonight as well. And then Bill Stone said something to the Courier-Journal today about what he would like Louisville to do with the NCAA notice of inquiry and how to approach the NCAA's investigation. Not a surprise, by the way, what he said. I feel like he echoes, and they made a point to say this was not him speaking from an official capacity in whatever role that might be in association with the university. It is simply him speaking from a UofL fan standpoint and him feeling like he's echoing the UofL fans' standpoints view and opinion. So all of those things I definitely want to get into, but I did want to start with this. This was a cool thing that came down today. I don't know how long this has been in the mix or how long this has been talked about as a proposal, but the Louisville Metro Council has made a resolution that part of what would be the street right in front of Churchill Downs would be renamed John Asher Way, a decent chunk of that. John Asher, who was a fantastic ambassador for the city, for Churchill Downs, for horse racing in general, was absolutely a pillar of the community, did so much stuff, charitable work, working for different nonprofit organizations, giving his time to anybody that asked for it. He was just a real, real giant of a person around the community, and we lost him way too early this last spring, or actually fall, I guess it was. Man, I can't believe seems like yesterday we were having that show about John passing away and being at his service. But that approval is going to be on Wednesday with the Louisville Metro Council. So the resolution is there. They'll vote on it on Wednesday. I say the approval because I can't imagine somebody voting no on that, right? Like, if you vote no, good luck. good luck walking around and showing your face around Louisville if you vote no. So I assume that will be rubber stamped on Wednesday. And that will, I don't know how, is that going to be immediate? That would happen? Probably should have checked up on that, but it just popped into my head because I just assumed that would be in place by the time the Derby rolls around. I mean, we've got a couple of weeks, you know, that would be, I guess, a week and a half that you would have before Derby Day if Wednesday is rubber stamped and approved. So we'll see what comes with that. But I did want to start off and put that out there with the Metro Council's resolution to rename a portion of that street John S. Asher Way. And I believe Churchill Downs is going to pay for all the signage, the street signs and everything to make sure that there is no holdup as to why it might be voted against. It's like, no. It's okay. They're going to pay for it. There's no expense there. Churchill Downs is paying for everything. All you got to do is just rubber stamp it and approve it. I can't imagine that won't happen. So that's a really, really cool honor and memorial for John Asher to be remembered there every time you go to Churchill Downs, that you see the street name there named after him. Tiger Woods just bogeyed the fourth after putting his fairway showers tee shot in the sand. Second shot had to lay up in the fairway. Third shot about 12 feet from the cup, and then he slipped it past the right. So gives one back. Birdies and then bogeys. So Tiger still sitting minus two, what would be five shots off the lead. Texter says... This is the best one, by the way. It's 306, so it's the under. It hit the under today. We got to keep track on the over-unders and how many days. So far, it's been like two in a row. It's been the under. On Wednesday with Andy in here, it was way over. It was like 330. Texter says, Jason, why don't you co-host or host a co-ed or co-host a show with a co-ed show would be fine, too. Just have to run it by the wife.
Why is Locke suddenly agreed to be your co-host?
Right? Yes. Jason, why don't you co-host a show with Matt Jones and just bash U of L all hour, you UK homer? Yeah.
Actually, to be fair, that really would be a show that Locke would want to be a part of.
That's right. Yeah. See, no, he would want to bash UK all hour. So it would be a point-counterpoint. It would be like one side bashing U of L, the other side bashing UK. You know, it'd be... Oil and water. Hatfields and McCoys is what it would be. Jason Day, now three out of the last four holes has birdied. He's sitting at minus seven co-leader as well. That leads us into this text coming in, 437-9680. This is just an honest question. I'm wondering what percentage of people that listen to the show give a damn about golf. I do love your show. I would say enough that the updates throughout the show are fine for those that even don't like golf. That there's a decent enough percentage that it's the Masters. Even if you're not necessarily a huge golf fan, this is like, even if you're not a big NASCAR fan, are you still at least like casually paying attention to the Daytona 500? At least like, oh yeah, it's on. Let me throw it on in the background. I don't really watch NASCAR, but I do that when the Daytona 500 comes along. So I think that's the same thing with the Masters, even those that may not like golf. But certainly there's a ton of people that are interested that like golf. And even those that don't, the updates from time to time aren't that big of a deal. Justin Thomas just chipped in off the green for a birdie. So there's an update on Justin Thomas. He birdied the fifth. He's now sitting at minus four, only three shots off the lead. So good for him.
Also a fan of this text, it's only 3:08. Why are you already talking sports?
That is a great question. Very good question, sir. We got a full court press coming up at 4 o'clock. We will talk no sports after that. Sports or leisure comes up. We'll have sports questions, but not much sports talk. Dave Skoll, Biggest Bits, is going to hang out with us in the 4 o'clock hour to play a little sports or leisure. I believe he will offer some of his own trivia questions, right? Typically, he comes prepared with his own questions. So when Magic comes up with questions,
nice
and then Dave
Skoll's
in,
and all wrinkled from
that's
like a
right,
month ago.
That's right. He's like, I still got these questions, but you know what? I'm not,
President's Day.
I'm not. Look, I am not judging. Okay, I've got.
Oh no, it's perfectly valid.
I'm going to pull up my sports or leisure sheet right here. Okay, one of the categories is still Governor's Cup. Okay, I have two questions left from Governor's Cup. I ain't erasing them. I also have Mr. Basketball questions still sitting there. I ain't erasing them, okay? Not that they're going to be used or somebody will ask or really want them, but they're there just in case. Why take the time to come up with those and then, you know, throw them away?
Tangentially related to sports, because it's starting to pick up steam on the internet.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen the Star Wars Episode 9 trailer?
You are asking the wrong guy. You know this, Magic. But that's okay.
See, because I don't know if you've at least even just casually watched, you know the last two.
Here's the thing.
Not the side ones, like the actual main ones.
No, I've only seen the first three.
Never even saw the prequels.
No,
even like on like a marathon when they're on Spike TV or something.
No, because then I got to watch the commercials. I didn't DVR them. I'm not that interested to sit through 3-minute, 4-minute commercials and then get back into wherever it was at that point. I mean, it's not like it's A Few Good Men coming on. It's like, oh, well, I'll wait for him to say, you know, I can stand the bodies and the blood and the bullets. But what I can't stand is you to stand there in your white uniform with your Harvard mouth. And extend me some bleeping courtesy. You gotta ask me nicely.
Okay, so I know James Bond is a no-go. You've only seen the first three Star Wars from the 70s and the 80s.
That's right.
A very different timeline, but just pop culture-wise. I know you have probably not seen the Harry Potter movies.
Oh, no.
Okay. Have you seen any of them? Like, which Marvel movies have you seen? I know you've had to have seen at least a couple.
I've seen most of them, actually.
So are you like
most
up,
all of them?
So
yeah,
you'd
I'm
be up to date.
Yeah.
With, okay.
Oh yeah, I'm ready for the summer. Yeah.
You've seen all the Bourne movies.
Yes.
Okay. You have seen, trying to think of other big
Mission
series.
Impossibles. I've
Mission
seen
Impossibles,
all of them.
Yep.
The Ring. I saw the first two.
But did you see The Return of the King, Lord of the Rings?
No.
Okay. So you're one off on that.
Yep. I didn't see any of The Hobbits.
Huh. You got like this weird thing where it's like certain movies you're extremely up to date on. You're like, yeah, I know what's going on. And then other ones you're just like,
you're right,
off in left field.
Absolutely. Look, it's embarrassing. My two best men in my wedding, my best friend and my brother, are the biggest Star Wars geeks you'll ever find. And then there's me.
That's an interesting question, actually. Like, is it weird, and not making fun of you, but just because I don't hear it that often, is it weird to have a sibling as a best man or a best man or whatever?
I don't think so.
Is.
I mean, if he's one of the people that you're closest with.
No, I don't think it's weird, but I just don't hear it that often.
Okay. Hmm. Texas says, are there Star Wars questions due to Star Wars celebration?
I wanted to avoid it just simply because of the fact, like, it feels like it's too soon, and if I try and cater everything around that, somebody's going to be like, I haven't seen it yet. Let's go see it after work.
See, also, that's the thing, too, is I'm not really big into the whole trailer thing. Like, oh, you got to watch the trailer. Like, people lost their you-know-what when the Game of Thrones trailer came out. I still haven't watched it.
That's fair.
I've lost my trailer buddy
because Phil Baker's not here.
Your trailer buddy. You guys just sit around and watch trailers?
We do, however, because
I had a fraternity brother that worked in L.A. that was his job, was to create trailers for the movies.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
We do have, however,
I don't remember
with,
his name. He was much older.
With Season 8 premiering on Sunday, we do have Game of Thrones questions today for you in Sports at Leisure.
So we at least have that. Okay, so the trailer for the new Star Wars, what episode is this, 15 now?
In the main series, it's episode 9, but okay. It's like the 13th movie or something.
Oh, see, I was close. I was just exaggerating and I was close.
Oh, no, that. No.
I've seen all the Indiana Jones.
Okay, so, well.
Dr. Jones.
Actually, it's been about a decade since the last one, so that's good.
It's fine, but I've still seen them. Well, I guess the one with Shia LaBeouf, I saw
Did
that
you
one too.
See all three of the Christopher Nolan Batmans?
Which ones are those?
So it would have been Batman Begins, Dark Knight, Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah.
With Hardy being in the last
one
as Bane.
I've seen all of the Batmans since, like, what was it, Michael Keaton?
Yeah.
One of the first ones that brought back, and then
even
Penguin. You know, back in the day. So I've seen all of those. I've seen the nipple suit. I've seen the really bad Kilmer.
Card, yeah.
I've seen all of those. I don't know. It's
so hit and miss with you.
You are absolutely right. It is 100% hit and miss. You are not wrong about that. All right, 437-9680, UPS Jobs text line to be a part of the show, 267-9680. That is the phone number. Can we play... Scott Satterfield was on ESPN Louisville yesterday, 93.9 The Ville, with Mark Innes. And one of the things he brought up with Scott Satterfield, or Satterfield Lombardi, as Andy likes to call him, they were talking about the 13 different players in the transfer portal. Now, this stuck out to me because we had a conversation last Friday about a coach that two years ago, was in the position that Scott Satterfield is in right now, taking over a program that was going through a pretty decent, sizable turnover and rebuild from some of the things that were going on in that program at the time, that is Minnesota. And so here's Scott Satterfield yesterday talking about the different players, 13 of them in the transfer portal, and why that is, his reaction to all those different players that are deciding that they did not want to play for him.
There was a few, obviously, that could come to mind that you think, okay, probably, you know, this guy right here, maybe end up moving on. You know, maybe he's a little bit further back in the depth chart. He wants to play, you know, and I can't help a guy for that. I think that he wants to play, man. I'm all for it. Go find somewhere to play. And then, you know, there's a couple more guys that, you know, I thought maybe, you know, we're trying to give them a chance to see if they can really buy in, do the things right that we want on a daily basis. I mean, we're asking these guys to, you know, not anything out of the ordinary. You know, eat your meals when you're supposed to, go to class, do your study hall, all those type things. And if you're not living up to that, you know, there's going to be consequences. And, you know, and some of the guys maybe didn't want to live up to some of that stuff. And so, you know, they're moving on. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if there's any surprise. I think I've been in this business long enough to know that nothing surprises me. And I think, you know, you got to just roll with the punches with some of it. But again, we're here to support the players that are on our team, the ones that are doing everything right, that are busting their tails to help us, you know, win football games. And so we want to be able to support those guys, and that's what we're doing.
So he talks about, you know, some guys that are just, you know, it's not going to work out. You're expected to do these certain things, and if you don't do them, then there's going to be consequences. You don't want to accept those consequences. You don't want to live up to those expectations that are going to be there. Then you probably need to find somewhere else to play. Last week we talked with P.J. Fleck. And this was year two for him at Minnesota. And again, he had the boycotts and the things like that that took place the last year at Minnesota before he got there. So he gets there, and there's a program that is crumbling, and he's got to take it over. And that's what Scott Satterfield is essentially doing as well. And you're kind of building from the ground up, even laying a foundation. Like, there was a foundation when Bobby Petrino took over. He started building the house, and then he just decided to, you know, implode the entire thing. And so now Scott Satterfield is dealing with trying to reset that foundation. And P.J. Fleck said that it wasn't until the midway to a little bit past the midway of the second year of this year when he felt like some of the things he wanted to get across were starting to take hold. Not that, okay, it's working. He said you could tell it was starting to take hold. Not that it was up and running and boom, it took that long and now it's a machine. No, and that's the same thing sort of with Chris Mack too, is when you're taking over a program, sometimes certainly in college basketball, we look at it in being such a quicker turnaround because a player here or there can change the fortunes of a program almost immediately and overnight. And so, yeah, we look at that a little bit differently. And when there's 85 scholarship players, there are a lot of things that you got to deal with in trying to turn those things around. But the one line last week from P.J. Fleck that he said was, it takes a while to get the right people in and the wrong people out. And I thought that was a really interesting line because they're probably, with this past season, with the program, there were probably a decent amount of wrong people that were around the program. And certainly the coaching staff, some of those were, that was probably part of the process is making that first decision anyway. And so those are gone as well. So I don't know how long it's going to take. I think the words from Vince Tyree, you know, a couple of weeks ago when he said that, you know, when he hears from the coach that the roster construction was just so out of balance, and he says, maybe I should have, maybe my expectation should have been set a little bit lower in terms of what I thought this team and talent wise was. I mean, that's essentially him resetting the bar and saying, maybe this isn't a team that's going to be battling for a bowl game next year. We'll see. Last one about the quarterback, because it's such a big deal that people are going to be only paying attention to. With Louisville, that was a year ago with Kentucky, is quarterback. Terry touchdown, and what's he going to look like? And Gunnar Hope might, you know, all that stuff. But now for Louisville, it's the Puma. Scott Satterfield called him once, and that is the only name for him. Dave Skull called him Malik Runningham, and then the transfer from App State. But the question was about, one, the quarterback on the roster. He did say before this that the quarterback he hopes is on the roster. Didn't say yes, but he says he hopes the quarterback that's playing this upcoming season is on the roster. This is about Malik Cunningham being too good of an athlete to be holding a clipboard next to Scott Satterfield.
He's a player. I mean, you know, I don't want to stand beside him on the sideline. I know that. He's too good of a player, so we'll try to find ways, you know, to get him in the game, wherever that may be. You know, and so we'll see. I mean, you know, if it's a quarterback, if it's a, you know, wherever. I mean, it doesn't matter. He's too good of an athlete to be standing on the sideline. So you're exactly right. We'll try to find ways for him. But he, you know, he also can win the job at quarterback. I mean, he's done some great things with his legs, obviously. He's throwing the football at a good rate right now, and you know, so we'll see how it goes throughout the summer and obviously camp. When we get into August, you know, we have a couple of scrimmages early on. We'll get a good idea and a good feel for where we're at with everything.
He still could win the job, but I at least like the fact that if he's the backup quarterback, man, you just need players. Louisville's not in a position, Scott Satterfield's not in a position of saying, well, this guy's a dynamic athlete, but he's the backup quarterback, and, you know, he's probably going to need to be over Southern. No, he needs to be on the field in some way, shape, or form, some fashion, and that is ultimately your job to figure out how to get him on the field and how to use his playmaking ability, whether it's even throw two quarterbacks back there, whether it's the Puma or the App State transfer or the Runningham. If you've got to have two guys back there, then figure it out. That's sort of the job now, is trying to find how you can get the most out of those particular players. Yesterday, or I guess it was Wednesday night, but we talked yesterday about the notice of inquiry, verbally, to the university, that the NCAA will start their investigation process with the FBI scandal that's going on and Louisville being part of it and Louisville being implicated in it and the allegations against the university, the basketball program, and the former assistant coaches. Bill Stone, who is still in some capacity with the university, I'm not sure the exact capacity that it is. Actually, I'm trying to find it. Member of the university's board of overseers. So there you go. I knew I was going to find it somewhere. So he is in some capacity. So in this, it is not a, okay, this is an official stance from the university. But he said to the Courier Journal, he told Tim Sullivan in the piece today, says, why do you want to be Mr. Nice Guy with the NCAA? They give no credit for being morally correct. They give you no credit for being honorable. They give you no credit for acknowledging your own sins. So why acknowledge them anymore? He goes on to say, in my opinion, a good strategy would be to drag this thing out so that when finally all of the evidence is in, the NCAA would have to determine, I guess we're going to go out of business because every school in the country is involved, Stone said. I'm serious. Time is on our side. We should run out the clock on this one because every day you're going to learn people are much worse than us. This also coming in from in the Tim Sullivan piece, Keith Johnson, a 1980 U of L graduate, founder of Stop Loss Brokerage. I think it's been demonstrated that full compliance and self-imposing does not work. The other universities that went to the opposite direction and dug in their heels have been largely left unscathed. I've got to think in retrospect, had the administration taken that stance, we'd still have our championship banner and far less restrictions than were ultimately imposed. He goes on to say, basically, we sold out. The message at the time was you should self-impose. That was the message we were getting from the NCAA. And, of course, we complied with that to the utmost. And then afterwards, they continued to levy, I think, the harshest penalties they've ever imposed on any institution. Well, I mean, there's been death penalties before. Regardless, that was my own.
You're going way good. Reel it back.
That's my subjective. I apologize. Back into the quote, ever imposed on any institution. That was followed up by effectively letting North Carolina to skate on those academic violations, which had gone on for decades. There's no rhyme or reason for what they do. Here we are in good faith trying to apply their message of self-imposed, and it just kind of blew up in our face. A couple of things to that. I understand that aspect of it, and I understand that point of it. And I would also say, if I'm Louisville, that too. What if Vince Tyree walks into the meeting with the NCAA like this? With this, he walks in like he's
wearing a leather jacket. He's still wearing a suit, right, but he's just wearing a leather jacket over it.
Over it, he walks in like in 1980s with a boombox on his shoulder with this playing. Like how they would show up to like a girl's house and hold the boombox playing. Like Tyree has like an intern behind him, walking behind him, like it was in a, like he's walking out for a heavyweight fight. You got all the hype people behind him, like cheering him on, and he's walking. He's got the hoodie on with the leather coat, and behind him, they've got the boombox playing. No more, Mr. Nice Guy.
Are you wearing fingerless gloves?
are Mr. Tyree, are you okay? I am. I don't think you will be.
Is Neela wearing leg warmers?
Why is she wearing headgear? This is odd. We're ready to spar. That's why. I don't think he sounds like that, but regardless. God, why can't that be what really happens?
He walks out of the front door and he gets on a motorcycle holding the back of Jeff Braum. Just rides off. It's a position Jason seen people get on a lot.
No, it can't be the Jeff Braum. It's got to, you know what it is? It's Neely sitting on the hog. And then Vince Tyree slowly stares at the NCAA infractions committee, lifts the leg over, gets on the Harley, wraps the arms around Neely Bendapudi. She takes off, and he holds one fist in the air like it's at the end of Breakfast Club while they're driving on.
Cardinals!
Carnation! It's Breakfast Club, and then it just stops the scene. And that's the picture.
It's like that freeze frame in the middle. He's about to punch somebody.
That's right. It's the Breakfast Club at the end when he's walking on the football field.
Hey, Emmert! Got something for you. Freeze frame.
Bring it. So anyway, assuming that doesn't happen. Assuming. We don't know. We're going to throw a dart that doesn't happen. I get, like, that's the stance from a lot of people. And I said as well that they should not just simply stipulate whatever the NCAA is saying. Hey, here's what we have. Here's what we think happened. And the previous go around, it was, okay, we agree with all of those things. Let's just fight about money. And it's only going to be about money. And the NCAA said, okay, well, we're still going to take the banners. The difference between saying they should fight to then, I think, the extreme on some of, not the extreme in tact, but the extreme in, I think, sort of misrepresenting history in what's taken place of the, you know, all these other universities that have fought. There's one. It's North Carolina. Like, there's been a lot of universities that have said, no, let's work with the NCAA. This is what we're expected to do. They say that if we work with them, then they will be easier on us. There are mitigating factors that go along with it. And this is part of it. Like, it's been North Carolina. And while I completely disagree with the NCAA's view that this was outside of their jurisdiction, Jay Billis feels that way. Jay Billis feels the way that the NCAA feels. Bobby V, Mike DeCourcy. We've heard a lot of people that I respect their opinion on a lot of things in sports. I just disagree with this particular stance because I think reasonable minds and logic will tell you that this was absolutely 100% being used by these programs for keeping players eligible. We know that. But But it's not that the NCAA is like, okay, well, North Carolina fought us, therefore we're going to go easy on them. North Carolina was willing to fight them in court because they had a case, because they felt it was outside of their jurisdiction, that they are not in the business of legislating academics on each individual university. And the NCAA essentially said, yeah, we're not going to fight you in court because we think we'll lose. Now, if I'm the NCAA, I would have gone after them and said, no, we absolutely believe this was being done for sports and we can prove it in court. I think they surrendered a little too easily, did the NCAA. But they did, because North Carolina actually had a case. That is not what's going on here. What happened with Louisville the first go-around and what happened this go-around is 100% within the jurisdiction of the NCAA, within what they control. This has nothing to do with Louisville setting up fake classes. We all agree. Most of us. Shouldn't say we all. A lot of people agree that North Carolina knew what the heck they were doing.
Is that Mike DeCourcy rolling up in front of the studio?
Yes. Also, right behind Tyree. It's Bendapudi, Tyree, DeCourcy. It's an odd mix, but that's what it is.
Now, Jason, just hold on
wait,
a second.
Wait a second, Jason. Neely just looking over, pointing at DeCourcy behind her.
There's a question today. Has Mike DeCourcy ever ridden a motorcycle in his life?
No way. No way.
Should we put that up and tag him?
Yes. And he'll say, how the heck did this come up? And we'll say, don't ask, Mike. Don't ask, because we have no clue how the heck we would have arrived at that question. But we did, okay? We did. Follow us down this labyrinth as we get to the conclusion of you on a motorcycle, Mike. I have no clue, but that's how we got there. But a lot of us agree. Look, we know what they were doing. But there is a difference between those and Louisville. There is a difference. I would be willing to fight the NCAA if I'm Louisville. I'm still going to do that. I'm still going to not necessarily be combative, but I'm not going to just simply find something handed over, like what happened the first go-round. And what also gets lost when we talk about the NCAA not including and taking into account the mitigating factors for Louisville, that Louisville felt like they worked with them and the NCAA did not acknowledge those things. Let's stop acting like the postseason ban was for naught. That is such a conflating argument that it gets regurgitated and thought of as if like that's fact. Well, because the NCAA didn't acknowledge that Louisville did some of those things, and they still came down hard in other areas, well, then Louisville shouldn't. Clearly, they didn't help out by getting the postseason ban. They would have been given a postseason ban. Just because they didn't give you another one doesn't mean that they wouldn't have given a postseason ban if Louisville didn't self-impose. So that is that argument that maybe isn't, you know, a majority-held belief gets talked about way too much. It's like right here, basically, we sold out. The message at the time was you should self-impose. That was the message we were getting from the NCAA. And, of course, we complied and to the utmost. And then afterwards, they continued to levy, I think, the harsh. But that was followed up by effectively North Carolina. There's no rhyme or reason for what they do. Here we are in good faith trying to apply their message to self-impose. And it just kind of blew up in our face. No, it didn't. It didn't blow up in your face. Self-imposing did not blow up in Louisville's face. Chuck Smert working with the NCAA and the tact and strategy of, if you comply to the utmost degree, they will take it easier on you. That blew up in Louisville's face, because they were going to get a postseason ban. There is 0% chance that Louisville was going to make every single postseason after that. If they did not self-impose, Louisville would have been still taken out of a postseason. 100%. So, and by the way, it might have been the one that they missed anyway, that they ended up going to the NIT, because they got their penalties on, June 15th of 2017, and then they appealed And they had already taken the postseason ban. So if they didn't take the postseason ban, those penalties would have come down on June 15th, and then they would have been eligible for the postseason coming up that next season for the 2018 postseason, 2018 NCAA tournament. And as it turns out, they played in the NIT. Of course, they wouldn't have had the best experience and the best home court advantage and atmosphere that's ever been had in the Yum Center in the history of the Yum Center. That wouldn't have taken place, but they would have been able to go to the tournament in 16. And we don't know if they would have come down harder if Louisville would have just said, no, we're not going to impose anything. We're not going to impose a postseason ban. We're not going to impose scholarship reductions. We're not going to impose recruiting restrictions. We're not going to impose anything. We'll let you do that. They may have come down even harder. Like, those are things that we simply do not know. We know that in the grand scheme, the feeling was they didn't take the mitigating factors into account to the point that Louisville would like, and even the appeals committee said the same thing while upholding all of the original issues with Louisville. So the whole delay, you don't really have control over that. There isn't a control with Louisville to play the thing out and extend it as long as they can. That's not in their control. They have to abide by the timeline given. When the notice of allegations, now there's a difference between notice of inquiry and notice of allegations. When there's a notice of allegations given, Louisville has 90 days to respond. They can't take a year. They have 90 days set up by the bylaws. If you think you want to fight and have any chance of winning in court or really fighting the NCAA, you'd better abide by those particular rules that are set out. Because you can't fight the NCAA and say they weren't following the rules while you yourself are not following the rules. So you got 90 days to respond. The NCAA will then respond within 60 days, taking into account what you disagree on in the notice of allegations, and then reinforcing their argument with the evidence that you presented. And after that, 60 days, they set up the hearing in, what, 30 to 45 days, something like that. Then they have the hearing, and then they levy their punishment. And Louisville got the notice of allegations in October 20th of 2016. And June 15th of 2017 is when they got their penalty. So you're looking at, what, 9 months, essentially? 9 months from notice of allegations to penalties. You're not really going to be able to extend it past that. And even when you throw in the appeals, when did the appeal get denied? Later on that year, still in 2017? So you're still looking at a year. So it's not exactly like, hey, let's just play this thing out. Let's delay. And then who knows what all schools are going to be involved and implicated. And it's going to be way too much for the NCAA to try to handle, way too much on the plate. They don't have the manpower to investigate that. So just do whatever you can. Obstruct. Maybe you do that in terms of the investigation. Maybe you do that in terms of you aren't working as closely with the NCAA as Chuck Smart was, so that you aren't just simply saying, okay, we agree to this, we agree to that, we agree to this, we agree to that, we agree to this, we agree to that. No, maybe you fight those, and maybe then it extends the notice of allegations. On that point, we agree. If they can do that, if Louisville has any part of extending it or delaying it at all, then maybe they would be better served to do that. That is one side. Chris Mack might be on the other side saying, heck no, you get this thing over with as fast as you can. I'm not trying to be hanging out here for 2 or 3 years with this thing hanging over our heads. No, let's get this thing done. Let's figure out what the heck it is, and let's move on, and let's get past it, because I'm trying to get past this as well. Because part of the administration's tact and strategy should also be taking into account Chris Mack and what he would like to have done. If there is a choice of, hey, Chris, we can obstruct and we can delay this thing, or we can work with them and try to get it over as quickly as possible. Maybe there's a fine line between there. But it's one thing for the timeline. It's another thing to simply work with the NCAA and just say, yep, that happened. Okay, cool. We're agreeing with that. If the only evidence they have is Brian Bowen Sr. on the witness stand saying he received $1,300 from Kenny Johnson, if that is the only evidence they have that they can't prove him from Kenny Johnson's side, and Brian Bowen Sr. is not compelled to talk with the NCAA, and why the heck would he work with the NCAA when the NCAA essentially made his son ineligible forever? His son didn't get to play college basketball. His fault, his doing, but you think he's really in the business of helping out the NCAA in any way, shape, or form? So he wouldn't be compelled to help out the NCAA. So it would have to come from Kenny Johnson. And if they can't prove it from that side, then all you have is the testimony of somebody there. And it's like, okay, well, yes, he said that, but now you need to prove it. Okay, you're taking that person's word under oath. That's fine. And there is certainly something to be said with that. But it ain't exactly like people that sit up there under oath tell the God's honest truth, that would sit up there and pass a lie while they are sitting there at the pearly gates. Or pass a lie detector, I should say. They aren't sitting there at the pearly gates while they're talking on the stand. Plenty of people have given a different story. Now, I'm not saying Brian Bowen Sr. was lying. Don't misinterpret that. I'm saying Louisville should be fighting and saying, prove it other than what he said. That's him saying that. Well, a lot of people can say something. Katina Powell said a lot, but there was a lot of things she said that wasn't proven. There was a lot of things she said that was not a part of the facts of the case. There was a lot of things she said that were a part of the facts of the case. But it wasn't just anything that was said all of a sudden was used against Louisville. Prove that. That's the way I would go about it if I'm Louisville, not just simply saying, well, I'm going to obstruct and I'm not going to work with you and I'm going to dare you to do these things. And look, North Carolina did that and it worked in their favor only because North Carolina actually had a case because it was outside of the influence with the NCAA and their bylaws and what they control, as opposed to this is recruiting, this is dealing directly with the NCAA and what they have jurisdiction over. Westwood One's Masters update comes your way right now.
From the Augusta National Golf Club, Westwood One Sports presents this special report on the Masters. I'm Ted Emmerich. Tiger Woods looked very much like a major contender Thursday, except for missing four putts within 10 feet. Well, how does a 20-footer sound from hole number six?
This is for birdie, and he's going to play a lot of break in it.
Yeah, at least 10 feet from right to left.
There it goes. Starts it way out to the right. Breaking to the left. Good line. Good stroke. Good result. Birdie for Tiger at the sixth. He birdies four, bogeys five, gets it right back at six. He's three under and just four back.
Brian Katrick and Charlie Reimer with the call. The four-time Masters champion in one of the last groups to tee off here in the second round. And Woods is four back of Francesco Molinari and Jason Day, both at seven under par. You're listening to exclusive coverage of the 2019 Masters on Westwood One.
As a doctor who provided medical care to remote islands, Dr. Ben LeBrow has seen some things.
Piracy, hurricanes, being struck by lightning.
While most of us can't relate to confrontations with pirates, we get that life and work come with a certain amount of risk. But your retirement shouldn't. Dr. Ben purchased an annuity to secure a guaranteed monthly retirement income for life, so his money won't stop working when he does. Find out if an annuity is right to protect your future at retireyourrisk.org.
At Indeed, we believe a resume is a great way to see an overview of a candidate. But you're not hiring a resume, you're hiring a person. That's why we offer tools to give you a deeper sense of the people behind the paper, like skill tests, which let you actually see a candidate's abilities in action to make sure they're a good fit for the job. See beyond the resume with Indeed. Increase your visibility to great candidates with a free sponsored job upgrade on your first job posting at Indeed.com/promo. The sponsored job upgrade is a $50 sponsored job credit. Users are charged once the credit is spent or it expires. Terms, conditions, and quality standards apply.
Steamy afternoon here at Augusta National. Let's check the leaderboard sponsored by the Alliance for Lifetime Income. Find out how an annuity can help protect your retirement at retireyourrisk.org. Francesco Molinari never cracked 70 at the Masters last year. He opened with a 2-under 70 this year. And the Italian pounds out a 5-under 67 today in the second round. Molinari and Jason Day are tied for the lead at 7-under par. Day playing hole number 18. He's 5-under here in the round. Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka a shot back at 6-under par. Koepka a double bogey at 2. He is even today through 16. Johnson 2-under for his round through 17. Phil Mickelson a bogey moments ago at hole number 17. Now 4-under par, 3 back, along with Patton Kizzire, Matt Kuchar, Justin Thomas, Adam Scott, Louis Oosthuizen, and others. Not everyone can make it to the weekend. Projected cut at 3-over. Sergio Garcia would not play on at the moment. He is at 4-over as he plays Amen Corner. From Augusta, I'm Ted Emmerich, Westwood One Sports.
All right, so there you go. Tiger birdieing 16. That's what a lot of people care about. We got a full court press coming up at 4 o'clock. We will bounce around the country a couple of minutes at a time. We'll talk with Tiger's caddy and the progress of their round as well. With that full court press, that's what Magic promised me, so we'll see if he actually comes through today or not. While the update was playing there, I looked over to Magic. I'm like, man, it's hot in here. I should probably turn on the Mitsubishi Mini Split right there. And that's what I did, and now the AC is pumping in here to the studio because, again, the air ducts don't always get enough AC back here to our studio. It keeps us cool, does the DFH Company's Mitsubishi Mini Split, and we've got it rolling right now. Dave Skoll will be joining us, and then there will be two people in the studio, and then it just, at that point, I mean, good night. We need, like, you know, we better have the AC pumping and ready to go. It's different if it's just one person in here. We've got the glass front studio, the normal air ducts, and also lowering the blinds so I can actually see the TV. That helps as well. If you've got the sunroom, attic, or tough room to regulate the temperature, contact DFH about the mini split. Just visit dfhcompany.com or you can call 968-6222. 24-hour service, visit dfhcompany.com or call 968-6222. A number of texts coming in. We'll get to those on the other side of the break. 437-9680, dealing with what we were just talking about there. And also a couple of other points as well. We'll do that next. Full court press at 4 o'clock. Sports or leisure coming up after that. More Zone right after this. It's ESPN 680 105.7.
You are listening to the Zone Podcast. Check out Jason Anderson weekdays 3 to 6 only on ESPN 680 and ESPNLouisville.com.
UPS is now hiring package handlers in Louisville. Package handlers earn competitive wages. And with UPS's Metropolitan College program, you can graduate 100% debt-free. Get in the game with UPS. Apply now at upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.
Welcome back to The Zone, presented by CC Power Sports of Louisville on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Jason Anderson.
In the sand, off the tee. What would be a better song, though? Mr. Nice Guy, No More Mr. Nice Guy, or this one? I kind of feel like this one.
I feel like you come in with this one and you leave on No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah, this would be the one blasting as
it's
your,
it. You got to have a mixtape.
Right. That's true, yes. We're not going to take it. Just walking in. But also you got to kick the door open. When you get close to the door, you don't open it up or knock. You just got to kick the door open while that's blasting in the background. And Neely Bindapudi and Vince Tyree walk in while interns behind them hold a boombox that's playing that song when and if they meet with the NCAA Committee on Infractions. 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line. A few texts before we get to our top of the hour break and then a full court press. Texter says, follows up the text and says, I was using voice to text while driving. I'm sure you get the idea, but here's the text that comes in. I'm going to guess some of the words that were changed on the voice of Texas. These coaches are acting as direct agents for Adidas, the money coming from a something, not from Louisville. I believe it's Bowen had no knowledge of the transaction, and as the government stated, was a victim in the case, or Louisville maybe, had no knowledge of the transaction, and as the government stated, was a victim in the case. That would be my argument, whether any of it is true or not. Oh, 100%, I would argue that they are the victims there, but the NCAA would fire back and go, well, you were viewed as the victims in the state with those particular individuals that were paying and defrauding. The issue is the players coaches were also victimizing the university, but the coaches were being paid as university employees and they were blatantly breaking NCAA rules and bylaws, and that's a penalty. Whether you like it or not, it's still a penalty. That's what the NCAA would probably counter with. But certainly the NCAA or the government is saying that the university, they are the victims. That should absolutely be an argument that I would use. That's clearly been an argument that I know a lot of the other schools are using right now. But those schools are not on probation, and it is a bit of a different scenario for them. Texas says Bowen would have been safe at a Nike school. I guess they were wiretapping a lot of the Adidas people, but it was Bowen that was going around shopping them, but it was the Adidas that was the wiretaps that were there. Texas says you're forgetting that the committee that hands out penalties decided that they can make up whatever penalties it wants, regardless of any precedent or rules in place. Well, it can't just make up any penalties. It has a penalty structure, but it does outline, at least in Louisville's case as well, that depending on circumstances, it is allowed to go above certain penalty structures that would typically be in place, which is why Louisville did not have a case in court against the NCAA, because that's directly listed as part of one of the bylaws, and it was also placed in one of the different letters that Louisville got. What is a bylaw? It's a law you can buy. Let's buy this law out. Let's change it ourselves. Here's money. Throw money at the situation. We'll buy it. It's no longer yours. We own this law. We shall recruit any player
that
we want.
Is that how Wichita State gets away with it?
We will recruit any player we want. You mean the university, or you mean like those around the university that are maybe helping supplement coaching contracts?
Take that as you will.
I see. I think you're probably going the latter there. But I don't think they'll just like make up any penalties. Like, they can't just simply hand out, like, you know, here's 10-year show cause. Like, that wouldn't be something that they can do. But they do go out of their way to say that they are not setting precedent. That much is absolutely true, 100%. We are hanging out here in the Papa John studio. Go to papajohns.com or the app Radio XL. Two-topping, extra-large pizza and a 2-liter for just $14. That is Radio XL. Full Court Press coming up next, and Sports or Leisure still to come on a Friday.
You are listening to The Zone Podcast. Check out Jason Anderson weekdays 3 to 6 only on ESPN 680 and ESPNLouisville.com.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.